we see consciously what other people see unconsciously. And that's why semiotics is sometimes compared to psychoanalysis, but not to the Freudist one, which, you know, interprets everything as a sign of a sexual connotations. We try to see other connotations.
Hi, welcome to The Art and Science of Brands, podcast on how to build strong brands that connects and resonates with people. Today, we're going to speak about using semiotics research in marketing. Marketing semiotics is a human-centered marketing science used in consumer research, communications, and design strategy in order to grow brand value. And our guest today is semiotician and cultural researcher Masha Papantimo. Masha, welcome.
Hi, Misha. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me to this new initiative.
Let's start by introducing yourself and your way to semiotic research. How and why did you become a semiotician?
Good question. I start with my cultural origin and ethnic origin. I think that's relevant for our talk today. I'm half Greek, one quarter Russian and one quarter Tuvinian. Tuva is a small republic in South Siberia. It borders Mongolia. And I spent my childhood there, the first 12 years of my childhood in this region in Tuva. It was very different from Moscow. I moved to Moscow after Soviet Union collapsed in 1992. And since then, I've been living in Moscow. And also, I've been visiting Greece during all my childhood. And then and now, that's my second home because my father is from Greece. So I was exposed to different cultural influences and contexts, and it was always interesting for me to understand how it works and why people are different and why they see themselves different from others. And especially now, I think it's so important for us to understand each other, to learn to understand other cultures. And because from what I saw from my experience was that sometimes when you don't try to look from the distance at your own culture, you may be biased in evaluating what is happening. And it may be difficult for you to communicate with other people. And for marketing communication, of course, that's all very important. But for me, marketing wasn't the end goal of why I joined semiotics. It was about my interest in studying cultures.
Wow, interesting. And how long are you already in semiotics?
I first contacted with this theme when I was in the university in the end of 90s, in 1998. I remember when I was reading my first books in it, I had goosebumps on my skin. So interesting and so different it was from everything else that surrounded me. I studied applied sociology in the university, and I have a degree in applied sociology and public relations and PhD in social psychology. For many years, semiotics was a lack of professional hobby. I've been working in traditional marketing research, in media, in advertising agencies such as AC Nielsen, Publicis, BBDO. I had it research departments there. And I kept semiotics just for fun, you know, for something which gives me inspiration. And I used semiotics as the main method in my dissertation thesis. And then I presented it at one of the SMR conferences in Switzerland. And that's how the first client found me from the UK. And that's how it started. I remember it was Rob Thomas. He came to Moscow and he asked me to watch television and to look through the magazines and to write an essay on privacy. And I thought, wow, they pay people for watching TV and reading magazines. It seems like a good job. Yeah, and that's how it started. It's been around maybe 18 years.
Yeah, and I think it's a great time to introduce our listeners to what semiotics is and what is marketing semiotics. So can you please explain what is the concept?
Yeah, there are many, many definitions of semiotics. I like the simplest one, which is semiotics is the study of signs. And it is like that. Semiotics sees everything as language, as structure of signs, as systems. Find logics in chaos, in chaotic world. We learn how to understand it and we help others to understand this. And we see consciously what other people see unconsciously. And that's why semiotics is sometimes compared to psychoanalysis, but not to the Freudist one, which, interprets everything as a sign of a sexual connotations. We try to see other connotations and meanings as well. But the main idea of looking deeper from what is on the surface, this is what is the core of semiotics and the study of meanings. It studies meanings and cultures and how meanings are created in culture, how they change, how they evolve, how they function. And that is why it is also important for marketing, because marketing is all about meaning. And it's difficult to say when semiotics appeared, because it existed in the works of every scientist, I think, because they are all looking for meanings in their works, and philosophers and mathematicians and anthropologists and etc. The word itself derives from Greek semiotikos, which means observing the signs. So it's a really old theme. In its current, in its modern form, it started developing in the end of 19th century by the works of two fathers of semiology, Ferdinand de Saussure and Charles Sanders Peirce, and many other scientists of 20th century. In marketing semiotics, it came in the end of 20th century, closer to the 90s, starting in the 80s, with the works of Virginia Valentine and Malcolm Evans in the UK, and Rachel Lowes and Greg Rowland. There was an interesting community, and I was happy to work with Virginia and with Malcolm in the beginning of my career in this. So it's been a long way.
Yeah, and it's quite a new discipline for marketers to actually use marketing semiotic as the tool. And I find it very exciting to see how different brands are actually using semiotics in making more meaningful connections to the consumers. Can you give a few examples how semiotics, either in your job or generally for any brands, helped to define that connection or help to define the meaning and help maybe in advertising or in marketing communication? So how marketing semiotics actually works for marketing, for brands, and for business?
Yeah, in marketing, semiotics is it helps a lot, I would say, because marketing communication is about conveying messages and meanings. And communication is always difficult, even interpersonal communications. I think we all had an example when our friends or our family didn't understand us, or they understood something that we didn't mean. And imagine how it can be complicated. And especially for marketers who work for big audiences, because mass communication is the deliberate transfer of meanings to a collective subject. We don't know this million of people which we want to talk to about our brand. How to code the message for them? What message to choose first? What message will be culturally relevant? Which meanings will be accepted well by our audience? Which message can conveys the essence of our brand better? How it gives the information of our brand? And then, do we code it in the right signs so they understand us, the audience understands? Because if we don't do it, may happen like in this anecdote when a man on the beach is shouting, "Help, shark, help!" And people just react, "Oh, that's funny. He expects a shark to help him." Yeah. And this is the one of the examples how it works. And very often, people misinterpret messages, or even creators. They try to say something about their brand, and they do it intuitively, maybe not without thinking. And sometimes it works, sometimes not. We help, semiotics help to make this process of meaning creation conscious and controlled and effective. This is the main idea. And if we speak about different types of semiotic works, first we help decode what brand communicate. For example, look at these packages. I brought several examples because we don't have any slides. Maybe it's
with Oh, me. Nice.
Can you see it or the light?
Yeah, so just for those who don't watching, because there'll be some audio version. So Masha is now showing the vitamin C package that's called Swiss Energy with Swiss flag, and it also has the green ribbon along the package where the word C is. And it also has, I think, it basically it's white, so I think it's also important. And it has the visual interpretation of the tablet on it. So yeah.
So this very small box, but so many narratives, and we construct narratives unintentionally. And this is what differs human beings from animals, because ensures our position on the planet, as Yuval Noah Harari, for example, believes that our ability to create stories. It allowed us to achieve superiority. And Umberto Eco, one of the theorists of semiotics, also told that we need stories to survive. So that's all about stories, all about narratives. And even if you don't intend to put some story, you already do it. You make it Swiss energy, although it is produced in Bulgaria. It is called Swiss. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It has a green sign, which may be decoded as healthy and natural. It is also white, and white is in green is a common combination of drugstore, you know, pharmacy, something very familiar. And many other stories, if we read it carefully, and this is how it works. Take, for example, another thing. This is Twinings.
Yeah, this is a red English breakfast classical Twinings tea bag that Masha is showing. So, yeah, what story do we hear here or see?
What do you see here?
Well, I definitely see some old traditions by how the Twinings logo is located. So it's something that's been there for long. Probably red color gives me an energy, probably. That's how I interpret. And the English breakfast is basically confirming that it's some traditional tea that I have. But interesting, on the bottom, it has how many? It has 5 tea leaves, right? And it, the 4 out of 5, basically it shows probably strength. So then I decode it as it's a pretty strong tea, traditional one. And also, I think the golden twinings on the red, I decode it as the high quality, maybe even premium quality. That's how I interpret. Is it the correct interpretation, or there is no such a thing as a correct and incorrect interpretation?
That's a very good question. There is no such a thing as correct and incorrect, and we never base our conclusions about a subject, a concept, on just a single pack. If we analyze the tea category, we collect everything that exists on the market, and we decode all kinds of meanings. And also, we work together in a team. I never work alone, because then my subjectivity may influence. Of course, I have experience in decoding many topics, and I'm like translator of visual language to verbal language and vice versa. But anyway, it's better to work in a team, and what we call to make triangulation. It's used in many qualitative research methods and also here. So yes, but you made a professional marketing interpretation, and I think many people would decode it like that. And we could also talk about the meaning of red colors and fonts and specific words. This is what we usually do. We analyze these tiny details and we learn how it works. So this is approximately what can be done with semiotics on the level of analyzing one pack. But we also analyze concepts. For example, if a new brand is proud that it's natural, it's made from natural ingredients, and it wants to put this message in communication, then we took the concept of naturalness and we studied it. And we look at how naturalness is represented in culture in general, not only in the category, not only in packaging and advertising, but also in life. We go to food markets, we go to restaurants, we watch films that somehow connect to the topic of naturalness and many other sources we use. That's a real sample. We always base our conclusions on research. We don't take it from our heads, because then it's not relevant, it's not credible. So this is how we work. And then we find different shades of meanings within naturalness, and we help to code it not only in green leaves, not only in saying that's natural, but in many other subtle ways. And we help a brand to choose one of its ways, because there are always many types of representation for the single meaning. Sometimes we come up with 30, sometimes with 50 within the concept like that. Premiumness, femininity, success, the concept of home, the concept of love, even that we had in our studies. And then we help, we look what brand already does, so it stays consistent for during the years and it doesn't lose loyal audience. And we look where competitors are, what do they communicate also. And we find territories of meaning that can be good for a brand to use within this concept, within the message that they want to create. And in this territory, there are also several codes, semiotic codes of the meaning. Codes, the code is like the unit of meaning. In psychology, it is called frame, or in many other sciences, there are these different terms for calling groups of meaning, how they structure. We call it code, and we help to choose specific codes for communication. This is one of the ways.
Let's talk about the cultural context, because, for example, different concepts, like, for example, you said naturalness, probably would have different interpretations in different cultures and different countries. Does a researcher himself needs to be from the country where he does a research, or a researcher can be from anywhere in the world and try to get the interpretation cross-culturally? How does that work?
In my opinion, it's better to combine a experience from local person and someone from outside, because a local person would give a deeper understanding of language and history and culture, and an expert from outside would give a view which sometimes we don't notice when we are inside. For example, in my first study of privacy, it was before the toothpaste, by the way, I told this stereotype that in Russia we are very collective and we try to stay together and the distance are not that big, even in the queues. And then Rob asks me, then, so why the windows at the cars are black? People don't respect privacy that much. Why do they want to cover from others? And this is how it works best in collaboration and integration. I try always, when I worked for the Russian market and I started working for Greek market, I always read a lot of analytics which comes from foreign experts and foreign books about my culture. And I worked with expat managers, and we also talked a lot about how they see the differences between all the countries.
Oh, that's interesting. So basically, it's a mixed approach. So the person outside of the cultural context can see something that people inside the cultural context already get used to, and probably they take it for granted. But the person from the outside, they can question and mark things which are obvious for the people that are living inside. That's interesting.
We also use it as an exercise. Even for our own culture, we can try to imagine what would an alien think? What would an alien feel here? How would they code? Or maybe a Chinese person from 11th century, if he comes now to our country, how would he see things? Would it be normal or not? Also, a good way to analyze our own culture is to watch movies from 20 or 30 years ago. And we see how different the culture is today. Starting from smoking, you know, in front of children in every old movie, and to relationships between men and women. The gender politics changed, of course, very much, and many other topics. So this is what may help us to see from distance.
Let's talk about the global versus local dilemma. And this is especially hard for the brands which are present in many countries, or as we call them, the global brands. And they need to convey certain global meanings, but sometimes they need to locally adjust it. For example, I mean, let's take, I don't know, Coca-Cola or Dove. I mean, I admire the Dove campaign, which is called Real Beauty, which I think has a global relevance. But at the same time, there's different interpretation on what real beauty is. For example, in the United States or in Asia or if, for example, in Muslim countries or even in Russia. How would they approach semiotics? How would they approach interpretation of what beauty means in different culture? And when is it the right decision to do the adaptation of global campaign? And when it's okay to do the same thing, for example, when it is produced in the United States?
It's always good to check, to have a look and to test it locally. And this is what I've been doing in the beginning. I worked mainly with the British agencies for international brands such as Procter & Gamble, Unilever, and etc. They were testing their communications and they were collecting local insights for international communications. And then they gathered it from different markets and combined it into a single strategy. And of course, there are some universal things among cultures, especially in the latest years after the globalization. And also influenced by advertising, McDonald's and everyone else, I'm loving it. Brands helped us to globalize. I don't know what happens now. They say that it will stop and we will go to local communities more. In every region, one of the opinions. And but anyway, it always makes sense to have a check, to look at local specifics and to see how relevant for us the message is. And it is, if it is, then how to code it.
Let's talk about how to run semiotic research yourself. And I know maybe it's mission impossible, but I do sometimes have questions for different startups when they heard about the tool and say, look, we know that there is a marketing semiotic research. Can we do it ourselves? And then, of course, I say, well, I don't know because I'm not a professional, but I promise to ask that question to Masha. So if a startup comes to you and say, look, we have, let's say, empathy as one of our value that we want to communicate through the brand, and we have a certain country, let's say Mexico. Is there a way for a marketer from startup to do his own home research on how empathy is coded and decoded in Mexico as the country? What would you recommend as the approach?
My honest opinion would be, if it's the first experience and the first time you want to make a study, it's better to go for professional help, as with any other profession, because it may look that semiotics is so easy to do. It's one of the extreme opinions, because the other extreme opinion is that it's too complicated, only for the gurus. And all this theory, if you open one of the books of early theorists, it may be very complicated. But the other extreme is that you can do it very fast and, very easily, which is also not true. As in any other profession, you need experience, you need understanding of methods. But it's not impossible to learn it. And I suggest if someone in your team wants to do this kind of study, they can enroll to one of the semiotic trainings which exist and go for it, and then make several studies with experienced professionals. And then you'll have an idea of how it is done and you can proceed with this. Because anyway, it may be misleading and it may be limiting if you do it yourself. With the example of empathy, you may read the books about empathy, of course, and you may look at what other brands do, but then you may choose the direction, the route to represent an empathy, which wouldn't be ideal for your brand, which shouldn't be very effective. And this is usually what creative agencies do. They read about topic and they think about it and they try to bring some knowledge and not only their feelings in their work. But this is usually unstructured, and it may be, again, biased by subjective opinions, what I feel. Sometimes it works, especially with small teams and with small brands, when the owner of a brand understands so well the essence of the brand. And this is why I like to work with startups, by the way, and with small companies, because they are very holistic and they are very honest, and they know what they're doing, why they're doing. Although big companies with old brands, they have this bureaucracy and research teams may struggle to convince management that this is the where the culture is going to. We need to just stop saying that our brand is number one. Leadership is not like that today. No one cares what which is the number of the brand. Everyone cares what it gives to you personally. This is the leadership and many other examples like that. And startups, they usually, and more small brands, they usually don't have that problem, but they have some others. So my advice is to read something, to go for a training, to work, to make first projects with someone who does it professionally. And then if you continue to like it, you can do it. Or maybe it's too boring for you or too hard, because it looks a little bit like a very exciting field. But like any job, it may be boring. I am often exhausted after doing it. And I have to look through many, many, many examples because there are no artificial intelligence which helps us yet. I have to put everything in my head, all these hundreds of, you know, pictures and packages, and then somehow live with this. And I need, after each project, I need 1 week of detox.
Wow. And if a client comes to you for the semiotic marketing research task, what would be needed input information? What would you require as a brief, as a minimal package of input information for you to start working on that project?
Yeah, that's a great question. Any research needs a good brief, and we need to set tasks before, because sometimes it happens that if we don't do this, then clients start to ask for many other things, which we are not included. In the beginning, it's good to understand what you want. For example, do you want to decode the concept, one of the concepts that is central for your communication? Or do you want to find the idea for communication? Or both, maybe. Sometimes it's like that, and sometimes we work with different stages. And we first talk with clients, and sometimes we help them write a brief for the first projects, and then they realize how to do it, and then they do it automatically themselves. So clear task, yeah, what is interesting. And
And I know it very much depends on the scope of work and on which area, but if we define, for example, if that's a one market, let's say one country, and if there is a certain idea, for example, idea of let's say empathy, what would be the time frame needed to dive into it and get the symbols that are represented in this culture? And what would be the approximate cost for the client for such a project?
Here it may be different between different consultants, because we use this is one of the problems in modern semiotics, which I'm trying to convince my colleagues to solve. I would like to standardize it a little bit, and so we all do it more or less the same. And there is some standardization, and many companies, for example, we use RD, residual dominant emergent structure, which was offered by Malcolm Evans about 20 years ago, and semiotic square, which helps find territory of meaning and create give an inspiration for creativity and structure everything. These two models are quite complicated and they take times, but they make the research look as something that you make use. It's not only a descriptive thing, it's analytical. It is possible to make it simpler. Well, for example, residual dominant emergent model structures the codes into three groups, a little bit outdated traditional, then mainstream culture and trends and new things. You can also do it in a binary tradition, from to, what is out, what is next, simpler. I would study empathy, I would work for about 3-4 weeks with a team of 2-3 people. And I don't know, I don't feel comfortable discussing cost now, but
That's fine.
It's compared with, qualitative research with several focus groups that you usually do.
Right. So basically, it's a benchmark of several focus groups, and it's 3-4 weeks of several people working on one subject. Mm-hmm. And Masha, as you touch the subject, so basically there's different models, and I understand there's two core ones. One is a residual, dominant, and emergent coding, and the other one is called semiotic square. Can you guide us through what is this model is about, and what insights does these two models brings us as a marketeers, how we can use it?
Yes, of course. So let's start from RDE model. Malcolm adjusted it to semiotics from one of the Marxist books about development of culture, how culture develops. And it sees that culture develops in linear way. It's maybe a little bit of Western approach to culture, that there is always progress from one point to another. It goes like that. Something goes out, something stays and is understandable for majority of people, and something appears and is a little bit new and not very comfortable for majority. So emergent codes may be tricky to use if it's not for a very progressive audience. And also residual codes are not always so bad. They may work well for conservative people, group of people, or sometimes we can take something from residual field and took it to emergent to help them re-emerge. Because everything which is in mainstream, which is in the center, in the dominant, it is very easy to understand. And usually people don't object it and they understand everything, but they are not very original meanings and types of coding, not very new, not so interesting. So these are two other groups, residual and emergent codes, help us find something new. But sometimes we stay in the dominant. That's also fine because there are many of them. And you can find something new even between them. So this is how it looks. Sometimes we adopt it to, we change it to several countries, for example, in India and in countries like Russia, and maybe in Latin America. It was seen it everything as a circle rather than a line. Because in some countries, it is more important to maintain than to change, to keep than to develop. And that's okay. I know that many companies choose their own models, not only these. But anyway, and of course, even if we apply three types of codes, that's a simplification. And we often struggle where to put a code in residual or dominant because it's somewhere in between. And in life, it's not like that. It's not that simple, but we need this kind of simplifications to help brands work with it easier. Because if we describe the whole continuum, it would be impossible to use at work. Yeah.
Am I right to conclude that for mass brands that having the mass audience, they would most likely be in the dominant part of the coding, while the either startup or new brand, they have to differentiate and they have to be distinctive. And for them, they either need to go to emergent, especially if they're targeting the younger audience, which are kind of rebellious versus the dominant, or they need to go back to residual, which is kind of more traditional, just to get out of the clutter from the dominant square of the codes. Is that a right conclusion, or is it too much simplification here?
Generally, yes, that's right. And many mass market brands like merchant codes, they can be mixed. They can use several dominant and maybe one or two emergent, and dominant maybe more dominant and less dominant. And mass market brands often go to residual field if they are targeted at conservative and traditional audiences. And there are many young people, by the way, who prefer residual codes. It's not that simple by age groups. And
And you also said that in some countries it's not a line, it's a circle. So basically they're kind of it's like in fashion. It's basically repeating on certain cycles. Is there a certain time frame where the circle gives the full kind of full spin, or it also very much depends on the code and the country?
Yeah, maybe not even a circle. I use the spiral because there is always something new. And even when fashion comes back, it doesn't look absolutely the same. Yeah, there is always something new because time changes. And It's difficult to say how fast things change. I think in some countries it's faster, in some more conservative traditional countries, things are more stable during the years. It's an interesting topic to discuss.
And one thing triggered me when you said that now the pendulum is coming from kind of being global to becoming a little bit more local. Is that the trend that you see across the different countries? And if so, what triggers that kind of need for kind of feeling more closer to your local community, being more local relevant? Why is it happening? And does it happen globally or does it happen in certain countries?
I've noticed it many years ago in Europe and also in Russia, because Europe looks a little bit like a Soviet Union to me. Sorry, it sounds rude, but in many ways it tries to unite things that are not, that which are really different. And it has some good consequences and some problems within it. And there was a growing interest to local specifics and to maintaining local peculiarities and local history on the brand level as well. And at the same time, staying global. So what I saw was the mix of global, local. That was one of the trends when brands mixed international signs with their own, with the signs of their own culture. And that was usually the most interesting that could happen. And that was also in the music and in movies and everything. Not in the first, for the first time in history. And now I rely on economic reviews and the book of Peter Zions, as far as I remember, the guy who wrote, who predicted the war in Ukraine already in 2007, 2009, with specific dates between 22 to 24. He does analytics of geopolitical situation and demographics and many other things and economics. And he predicts that globalization is coming to an end at some point. I don't know if it really happens, but he thinks that we are moving to localized communities and borders and more independence between different regions of the world. Now, for many reasons, and maybe there is some sense in it, maybe not. But anyway, I think that people are interested in keeping their history and their roots. And this is what we see in marketing as well.
Let's talk about global events, which probably shifts the whole idea, and probably the new symbols are coming. And I think we had at least few big crises in the last years. One is the pandemic, the COVID pandemic, which probably created new demand for the safety and security, especially health safety and security. And for example, I see now that a lot of advertisement are using the people in mask as the kind of symbol of safety, or the gloves or the antiseptics. And the other big crisis that we see now is the war in Ukraine, which probably and shaping another demand for new meanings and new connections and, I don't know, new kind of connecting people thing. What do you see as the semiotician in terms of how these global events are shaping the whole kind of global cultural context and local cultural context, and how does the marketing and brands reflecting to that?
Yeah. The level of anxiety is increasing, of course, in the world everywhere. That's natural, taking into account the circumstances and what's going on. And brands react to this. And it's not for the first time in history, and not in this on that level as it happens now. But before, and there were many crises, and I even read, I wrote an article on these brand protectors, how brands react to the need of consumers to be protected, to feel safer. And there are several ways and several codes again for a brand to look as reliable as something that gives you care and stability and protection and lowers anxiety. But it's very important to stay sincere and honest, because if you just want to follow the trends just because it's popular, just because it's in the air, then it looks awful. And this is why marketing is criticized so far. So if there is nothing in the product which speaks about safety, I advise not to do it, not to use it. Only if it's somehow related to the topic, I would advise to use this kind of signs. But not for everyone, not everywhere, because then it becomes like playing with emotions of people, which is, of course, very bad.
Masha, thank you. And I think we're coming towards the end. And of course, one thing we wanted to ask, for the people that wanted to dive deeper into marketing semiotics, what would you recommend to maybe read or to subscribe or to listen? I'm sure there are books, I'm sure there are articles that you wrote, and I know that you have your semiotic kind of a conference. So what would you recommend to the listeners that want to dive deeper into marketing semiotics in terms of reading, subscribing, listening?
Yeah, I recommend you, if you're coming from a commercial field, I recommend you to join our group, our community of commercial semioticians, which is called SemiFest. And the guys, they organize great events. We'll have a conference in Mexico in several days. I'm coming there too. And also several online events during the year. There is a group in LinkedIn. It's called Semiotic Thinking Group. And there we discuss different questions, and someone can always ask something which is interesting for them, and we reply. And speaking about text and audio and videos, the field is very well developed now, and there are many great professionals working there. I would recommend a book of Rachel Lowe's, Using Semiotics in Marketing, Laura Oswald, Marketing Semiotics, early publications of Virginia Valentine and Malcolm Evans, the history of when it all began, how it was created. It's extremely interesting. Also papers and videos and all kinds of material from Chris Arning, founder of Creative Semiotics, Alex Gordon from Science Salad, and Kato Hunt from Space Doctors, and Al Zikin also from this company, and many, many other articles. If you are for the theory, if you are not afraid of this complexity which comes with semiotics, then of course Roland Barthes' Mythologies, Umberto Eco works on semiotics, Jean-Marie Floch, Yuri Lotman. Yuri Lotman is great. He's maybe simpler than many other authors and easy to understand about semiosphere and semiotics of culture. It is what I recommend. And I'm sure you, if someone is interested, they find their own authors, because there are many books on different topics, and semiotics is very well developed. There is semiotics of UX design, semiotics of face recognition, online recognition. And in one of the recent conferences, I also heard that an idea that semiotics can be used for the search for alien life on other planets. Yeah. And I liked it so much, because I was always, I did never understand why we are looking for biological lives on other planets. Why would someone need water and air if they don't live on Earth? That has no sense in searching the air and water. And semioticians suggest to look for the signs of conscious, to look for structures and for signs that there is a mind, there is even non-material, so that can bring something new to the world as well. So there are many, many sources, many different types of books and articles to read about. Good luck on this way.
Masha, thank you for this list. We will try to compile all the links that you just mentioned and put them in the description to that episode. Thank you so much for being our first guest and host. And it was very inspirational for me personally and very useful. And I hope for our listeners as well. Thank you for being our guest today, and have a best of luck.
Thank you, Misha. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.